And welcome into the Thursday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. Paul Kuharski will be along later in the program. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We got a lot going on the program today. It is opening night for the Nashville Predators. Andrew Brunette, Predators head coach, will join us later in the show at 7:30, so looking forward to that. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for his weekly visit coming up at 8 o'clock, and we will get into the Titans. We will get into NFL headlines with him, as we always do. Taking your thoughts throughout the show at 615-737-1025, our phone number. Ian Safar, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Robert. Happy Preds opening day to everybody out there, huh?
It does feel nice, right?
How about that?
You know, last year, and I know, you know, we're going to have Brunette on, and they want absolutely zero part of talking about last year, which I don't blame them. I wouldn't want to talk about last year either. But, like, if you're a Predators fan, like, today's got to feel pretty good from the standpoint of, like, you knew pretty quickly last year that it was over, right? Like, you start 0-5. By the time Christmas came around, like, you were just so far out of it that it felt like it was just impossible to climb back in. And then ultimately it became clear that it was impossible to climb back in. So
like, early on, it was weird. It's like you kind of just felt like they would turn it on.
Yeah.
And it would kick in for the first couple months.
And it just never did.
And it just never did. Yeah. And then you're just like, and then fate just kind of set in.
Yeah. So, like, it's been a, that was a slog to end last year. And that's from the fans. It's definitely from the players. Like, you know, I mentioned it on the show last year. There were times you walked in the locker room and it just felt like you were walking into, like, a funeral or something. It was like, man, like, everybody in here is just so blah. It's just a bad mood.
Just down everywhere, huh?
Yeah. So, like, it's nice from that standpoint where it's like, all right, everything's fresh. We talked yesterday about how the expectations are going to be really low for this group, which I think to some degree.
Outside expectations are very low.
To some degree, like, they like that. And then, you know, we've seen Predators teams kind of thrive on that before. We'll see how equipped they are to deal with it. But I do sense, you know, being around him at practice yesterday and just kind of getting a sense for the energy level and all that, like, I sense some renewed energy. I have no idea, Ian, what that's going to mean when it comes to the actual results of this hockey team. But, I think human nature, you get another kick at the can here and you can finally put last year behind you. I'm interested to see particularly – you know, these first two home games, like, can you get yourself off to a halfway decent start this year, which they've not been able to do the last couple of years?
I feel like they'll respond for the most part. You know, it's hard to know for sure, obviously, but I think they'll play pretty well. I don't know how much it'll translate to wins, but I don't know. I do feel a little bit, you know, they do feel bounce back in them. A little bit of a bounce back. I think they're going to exceed expectations this year, outside expectations, a little bit.
Yeah, I think so too. Now, is that going to result in a playoff berth?
I don't think they'll bottom five league projected, like, right now. You know,
yeah.
I think they'll bounce back. I don't know if it'll, you know, maybe they can push for a wild card.
Yeah.
Best case scenario, I would say.
I would say so too.
But I don't think they'll be bottom five picking. You know, talking about lottery again next year.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And, you know, Brady Martin making his NHL debut tonight. And I am really interested the first nine games here to see how that goes. Because not only is he making his debut, which Andrew Brunette confirmed yesterday, and I'm interested to get his thoughts on this later in the show, but he's playing immediately, and he's playing with Forsberg and O'Reilly. Like, it's like, it's not like Predators fans all the time
jump right in there.
They complain about, like, the young guys not getting an opportunity, which I think at times has been fair criticism, at times probably not so fair with the criticism. Well, this one, they're throwing him right in, man. Like, he's number one center.
Right to the top.
I mean,
playing
I
with
know
the big
that,
boys.
I know that he and, you know, O'Reilly situationally are going to probably alternate as to who's playing center, but, like, he's the center right now heading into the game. I mean, you're talking about you're playing with Philip Forsberg, which means that, like, there's really no time to like get your feet wet. Like you have to, if you're playing with Philip Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly
they're
on this team,
they're expecting you to produce right
you
now.
You have to produce,
yeah,
right?
Otherwise, you're not going to win.
Right. Like, I mean, so there's a lot on an 18-year-old, and I am so interested to see how he handles that. Now, the one thing I'll say about him, and you never know until the games actually start, but, you know, Alex Doherty from the Tennessean and I were talking about this yesterday. They clearly trust him a lot, which for an 18-year-old, I think is really – it really says something. Like, they feel like he's going to be in the right position. He knows exactly what to do out there. He's got the foot speed even at 18 to keep up with all these guys. And then we'll see how the physicality and
yeah, from what I've been hearing,
stuff goes.
He's, you know, for an 18-year-old, he's, you know, relatively physically mature.
Yeah.
He's obviously not going to be, you know, physically man strength yet.
Right.
But if you can hold up for a little while, you know, for the most part, maybe he can hold up for the year. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it's not unprecedented for players to come in and play their rookie year at 18, excuse me.
No, like,
so I don't know. It's quite possible.
I mean, if I'm being honest, my expectation for it is that he's probably going to get a look, and then when, you know, when guys start coming back off injured reserve, like Nick Hague is on injured reserve, Matt Wood is on injured reserve.
They'll need the roster spots.
They'll probably need the roster spots, and he probably goes back to junior. That's my guess. But how cool would it be if he played well enough in the 9 games where he was like, yeah, don't send me back to junior. Like, I'm ready. I'm ready right now. So that would be – that's probably – I mean, I think most Predators fans, other than the obvious of the wins and the losses, that's what you're looking for right now. Is like, can he actually make a case to stick around the whole year? And this is another situation where I just hate this. Well, he's got to play in the NHL. He's got to go to junior hockey. It's like, that's –
yeah.
To me, when you're drafted, you should be able to do whatever you want to do.
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah, and I guess they would probably, you know, be interesting to see what they would do with that first line.
Yes.
Brady Martin would be gone, so you'd probably move O'Reilly to the center,
yes,
back to the middle, and move someone up on that wing with them. So, you know, at that point, what do you do there? Does that mess with chemistry? Do you go youngster up there too, like with Brady Martin? Or do you bring up, you know, Marchessault and try and mess with that?
Right.
Or Bunting and see how that goes, more of a veteran presence. So that would, you know, change a little bit of the lineup, tweak a little bit here and there. But that third line looks pretty interesting, huh?
It does. I will say, I was going to say, that line has a chance to be absolutely hilarious. Like, and I loved...
Talk about the Disturbers.
Oh, man. I love the comment that Bunting had last week, and I forget who he said it to. But he was like, you know, I think the brass here was looking around and they just decided, how can we possibly just make the loudest line possible? Let's put Bunting, Halla, and Marchessault together. I mean, they are going to be chirping people all the time. We'll see how good they are, like in terms of generating offense. We'll see. You know, I have questions about what Eric Halla is at this stage in his career. But I will admit, I am very intrigued by that line.
Yeah,
Bunting, Halla, and Marchessault.
I'm a little bit intrigued in general about Bunting this season. You know, he kind of came over in the trade last year. Played a little bit towards the back half of the season, of course. But with the way the season was, and the games were felt so meaningless at the time, and it was hard to really grasp exactly what he's going to bring to the table on a regular basis. So I'm interested to watch him a little bit more and see how he fits in.
Well, and then on defense, you've got Roman Josi back in there tonight. And obviously, there's a POTS diagnosis in the offseason that he was dealing with. Everybody says he's 100% and he's feeling good. And now we're going to see what that looks like beginning tonight. You know, obviously something we'll keep an eye on all year long with him. And, you know, I was talking to somebody else yesterday about this too. And there's all that going on that's occupying the attention with him right now and what that's going to look like and, you know, how can he hold up with that throughout the season. And here's the other thing that I've been talking about for a while with this. You know, the other part of all that, beyond the POTS diagnosis and obviously, you know, you worry about the concussion stuff and how many of those he's had. I mean, the other part of that is he's 35. So – does Roman Josi still have a year or two of really high-level play left in him? Or, like we see from other people around the league and in sports, at 35 years old, is it going the other way? And it would be natural, if it is going the other way, But that's what I don't know. Like, what sort of year from him are they going to get? Because, you know, as I said yesterday, I think Adam Willsby's got a chance to be pretty good. I have no idea. You know, I'm very interested when he gets off injured reserve to see how they use Nick Haig and what role he's going to play. But, like, to me, there's a big difference in terms of your outcomes here depending on what Yosi is. Like, if Yosi is – if he's got one more year left of, you know, borderline Norris-level play – well, that's one thing. That's a pretty big deal. If he's going the other way at 35, that's quite another. That's, well, like, those are two very different things.
One thing that Yosi is really – that just stands out is his skating. And so I don't think that's going to drop off right off the bat, right?
Well, and even if it does drop off, he's so good at it.
He's still that – yeah. That second level is not going to be super noticeable.
Right.
He might not be going end-to-end, you know, all the time like he was 5 years ago. But – the way he's just such an elite skater, and he sees the ice so well, I feel like that part in his passing will translate.
Yeah.
You know, not quite Nick Lidstrom style, but his game was able to translate as he got older.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like
he could probably still play right now.
Yosi is a little bit different in the way he can skate, but some of that stuff will translate. And he's, like I said, I don't know, he's just such a natural skater. Like, it's like that Swiss Alps thing where he's just like, you know, natural skier.
Yeah.
And he just can just go like he's some type of cross-country guy.
Yeah.
And it's so, yeah, that part I think should translate. I don't know. I think he'll be pretty good this year.
Well, we're going to find out tonight. It is opening night for the Nashville Predators. We'll take your thoughts on that. Andrew Burnett will be with us later in the show at 7:30, so looking forward to that. We got the best and worst things in sports coming up later this hour as well. We'll take your thoughts on the Preds at 615-737-1025. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
You guys, I'm sure, have been chomping at the bit to get after this since April. Just the fact that it's here and tomorrow's go time, just how exciting is that for you and for the whole group?
Yeah, I mean, I think nobody, you know, we don't want to talk about last year, but I think we had a good little bit of time to decompress as a group. And we came back with a lot of energy, just speaking with the leadership group basically all summer. You could tell after, you know, we kind of took a little bit of break and we got back together that the energy level is high. They're excited. Nobody likes where we were. We think we have better to give, and now we have an opportunity to throw the boat back in here and see what we can do. And it's an exciting time of year, your first game. It's going to be fun to watch the excitement level of some of these young guys with their first NHL start. So really good vibe now. Just a feeling. So we got to work as hard as we can to keep this feeling.
That was Andrew Burnett yesterday after practice. Preds with their season opener tonight, taking on the Columbus Blue Jackets at home. Taking your thoughts on that, 615-737-1025. Joey from Bellevue on the text line says, you know, Brady Martin, country strong. He's got this. He'll be fine out there.
Farm boy.
Yeah. Wonder how many times that's going to come up this year.
Too many.
It's like, did you guys know that Brady Martin was on a farm? You know that he works on a farm?
And he did his draft interview from the farm?
Yeah. Will it be like, you know, Ryan Williams from Alabama? He's 17 years old. That's like a male. Really? Was he? I think last year I knew his birthday by heart. They talked about it so much. So we'll see what that looks like as the year goes on here. And, you know, you heard it there from Brunette. The vibe, as I talked about in the last segment, everything feels good. You know, the fresh start part of it. I think, you know, psychologically, that can be a really good thing for them.
Dare we say vibing?
Dare we say it? Dare we say it? We'll see what happens on that front. But now you got to go out there and you got to prove it. Here's what I want to know from Predators fans as we're sitting here dropping the puck here in just over 12 hours. What do you need to see? Yes, for the season as a whole, but even early on, what do you need to see to restore your faith in this coach and in Barry Trotz and in this plan? Because everybody knows how disappointing last year was. You know, they have been on the wrong side of some moves that have been made lately from a personnel standpoint. You know, there have been some trades that have not gone well for them. You know, they've lost, you know, people like Favreau for free, who, by the way, you'll see him tonight. Like, he's coming in. This will be his first time.
That's right, Columbus.
Coming back. So, like, they're on a run right now of moves that have not gone well. I mean, obviously, Stamkos, Marchessault, and Shea, that didn't work out so hot for you last year. So we'll see what those guys look like. But, you know, I'm trying to balance two things here because I remember everybody's excitement level when those moves were made. And the thought was, can you compete? Like, can you get yourself into the playoffs with a chance to compete and win? And obviously, the way last year went, I mean, it feels like that's so far away now. But I try to keep that in the back of my mind. And knowing that, you know, as we discussed yesterday, when you look at every list out there, nobody thinks Preds are going to be any good. And if people are guessing who the first coach in the NHL to be fired is going to be, all of those lists have Andrew Brunette at the top of the list. So what do you need to see early on in the year to restore your faith that Brunette is the right guy? Like, it is kind of crazy how similar these two pro sports teams are heading into a season where the expectations are very, very low.
So low. Both of them. Yeah. Yeah. And young and expecting a rebuild and a retool and just like a building kind of new process, you know, new coaches kind of on the hot seat.
Yeah.
Didn't go well the last season. High draft picks, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I guess a little bit of a rebuild, retool mode for both teams. And as far as what I would like to see just early on from Brunette, I mean, we got to get off to a little bit of a quicker start here.
I think that's it.
You know, like it started slow. And if it starts slow again, you got to start. I mean, it's fair to wonder, like, what's going on here?
Well, and I think even beyond, like, obviously, you can't have the start you had last year. Like, if you dig yourself in an 0-5 hole, like, that's just very difficult to climb out of. So, that's obvious. But, like, I think I need to see, like, let's have even better than just an okay start. Like, let's start. Like, let's get out there and get some wins. That would be what signals to me, you know, Skyler's talking about, you know, play fast, be above 500 after 15 games. That's kind of where I am. Like, start fast, not just start okay, right? Like, they've started poorly in each of the last 2 years. Now, last year it was obviously way worse, but I mean, I think people forget his first year they were 5-10 after 15 games to start. That's not very good. So, start really and the schedule really does not line up great for that. Like, there's some tough games that they've got early on. I mean, you know, look, Columbus was pretty good last year. They're very excited about what they're building. They got Utah coming in on Saturday. And then you immediately go out to Canada, and you're like Ottawa, Toronto, Montreal, Winnipeg. Like, it ain't a great schedule to line up for starting fast.
I don't know. Do you think being on the road is a good thing for
I actually do.
To start, you know, given the whole situation?
I do think being on the road is a good team. Now, there are some really quality teams that you're playing
on the road. Yeah, that's true. There's a double whammy there.
So that's kind of the double-edged part of the sword. But I do think – look, I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for the entirety of it last year, because at some point, like, you had a lot of veterans on the team. You ought to be able to come together whether you're at home or on the road. But I do think getting out of here together early in the year and being able to have that chance to get out. You know, people talk about bonding all the time. I think that's definitely part of it. But just being able to get away from the distractions and go play hockey, like, that to me is more than anything.
Yeah,
is what's important early in the year.
They'll definitely won't be the most talked about team that week on those trips when they're heading into the town. You know, it's not like they're sitting here all week listening to this. They'll be on the road, and it'll be in Canada, and that all the talk will be about all the other teams. Well, so at least they won't have to hear that for the week.
And I'll add one more to it. I mean, obviously, the fast start with the record is the most important thing. But, I mean, looking at the lineup, they are relying on a lot of guys that are either, one, up there in age to play really well for them, or two, way down there in age that haven't done anything in the NHL yet. Like, that's a pretty dangerous combination, right? And they are still – now, it's gotten better this year because they've made some moves. But they are still, as an organization, pretty light on the – 26, 27, 28, 29-year-olds that are impact players right now.
Prime right now, guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, one thing that would tell me a lot about Brunette early in the year is, on the one hand, can you get the guys who are, you know, your Stamkoses, your Marchessos, your Brady Shays, those guys that came in last year and struggled right from the jump, and then in some cases got better as the year went on, can you get them to play really well from the jump, 5-on-5 with your system? And then in other cases, and yes, I include Brady Martin in this, but I think the guys I'm really talking about in this are really two guys. it's Svechkov and Evangelista. Can you get those guys to be productive from the jump? Everybody's going to focus in on Martin, and I get that. I am trying to keep my expectations for him tamed. He's 18 years old. But, like, to me,
those guys are prime for a next step.
Yeah, like, they have to have it. If they don't get the next step from Evangelista and Svechkov, this team can't win this year. Like, there's so many other parts that just aren't there yet. They have, like, Svechkov is going to be playing in a really important role for this team all year. And if he's not ready for it, they don't have anybody else right now. Like, he's got to be the one that does it. So that's probably, you know, beyond the obvious of the win-loss total. How does Svechkov look early on? How does Evangelista look early on? And have the tweaks that you've made at 5-on-5, are those, do those show up immediately, right? Like, because
the defensive coverage was way better scattered at times last year, you know? And so can they be, does it feel more cohesive in the D zone kind of thing? You know, are they giving up grade A chances right in front of the slot for Saros?
Right.
Or they have that coverage kind of figured out. They're hoping the Perbix and Haig upgrades will help with that, which it should, because they're some big dudes and they got some length and they can block some shots and take up the slot.
Yeah.
So you got to hope that will help on that next level. And it would be nice to see or not hear Marchessault complain about the system constantly this season.
It would. I think that they figured that part out, but if you start losing, does that last?
You know, maybe we can add that on the checklist for the first week. Let's not have Marchessault blow up about something about the coach, maybe right off the bat. In French Canadian.
That's probably not a
While he's in Toronto.
Probably not a good start. It's like, wow, they're in Montreal and Marchessault's already barking about the coach. It's a week into the season. We'll take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. A new development in the Bill Belichick situation at North Carolina, which is just absolutely insane. We will get into that coming up next. We have the best and worst things in sports coming up later this hour. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. If you're looking for a good spot to watch NFL games on Sunday, come on out to Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, home of the 29-degree beer, and join 102.5 The Game for the pregame show before the Titans take on the Raiders. Pregame show brought to you by Parman Tractor and Equipment and Old National Bank. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We will have the best and worst things in sports coming up at 6:45 here on the program. So Ollie Connolly, who writes for The Guardian, he's previously been, you know, in the NFL and college football as a scout, a recruiting analyst, and has broken some things on the college football front. He put this out there yesterday on the latest development in the Bill Belichick situation. This is relatively lengthy, but I will read it for in its mostly entirety because I think it's important. So this is what he had to say on Belichick. Quote, per sources, Bill Belichick has discussed buyout options with North Carolina's hierarchy. Belichick has signaled a willingness to trigger his own $1 million buyout if he can find a soft landing with another team or in media. Members of Belichick's coaching staff have already spoken to other schools that are expected to be in the college football playoff about taking on roles during the postseason. From one coach, quote, the rats are leaving the ship, end quote.
See ya.
Some staffers believe a change will come within 2 weeks. Reports of serious recruiting violations remain under investigation at UNC. Recruiting and practice violations have already been proven by the school, according to multiple sources. Using recruiting violations to knock down a coach's buyout has become a standard practice, which we do know that.
Yes, we do.
Belichick, if he can't find a landing spot to trigger his own buyout, he's expected to accept a greatly reduced compromise rate. Belichick's communication with his staff in the past 2 weeks has been described as, quote, weird and distant, end quote, by multiple members of North Carolina's coaching staff. Yeah. Multiple coaches were unable to get a hold of him during UNC's bye week. And from one UNC defensive assistant, quote, what we've done to these kids is effed up, end quote. So there's a lot there that generated a lot of reaction around the land of college football yesterday.
Didn't the AD have to put out a statement?
To the point where there were statements put out from both Bill Belichick and Bubba Cunningham, the director of athletics. Now, I will say, these are the shortest statements I have ever seen put out there in this type of situation ever. This was the statement in its entirety from Bill Belichick. Quote, I'm fully committed to UNC football and the program we're building here. End quote. This was the statement from Bubba Cunningham, the athletic department. Quote, Coach Belichick has the full support of the Department of Athletics and University. End quote.
Nothing to see here.
Not very strong. not very strong statements on that front. Ian, I was thinking about this yesterday when I was reading this. You know, I remember we had Ryan McGee on from ESPN, who is just awesome. Before
he's tuned in that part of town now.
He lives there. You know, he talked with us about, you know, I've watched North Carolina football for a long time, and I think this thing with Belichick is going to be an absolute disaster. Like, he thought that they were just going to be awful.
Just not a good fit.
It is unbelievable to me how bad this has gone. Like, look, I did not expect him to come in and turn North Carolina football into some college football powerhouse. Like, I always thought that this, and we talked about this on the show, you know, this stupid mantra they threw out there of turning North Carolina football into like the 33rd NFL team. I was like, yeah, well, good luck with that, because that's not going to happen. But even I, who did not think it was going to go overly well, am stunned at how bad this is. And it's not just on the field. Like, they're awful on the field. You know, when they've played Power 4 teams, I think they've lost every game by at least 25 points. So they are horrific on the field. But when you factor in everything that's happened with him, and by the way, not a very long period of time, everything that's happened with him, from the Jordan Hudson situation and how weird that is on its own, and that's just the personal relationship part of it, which, whatever, do your thing, I guess. But involving her in the football operations.
It's a complete 180s hypocrisy.
Complete 180s on that front from how he used to handle things. Make sure she's tagged on every email, and then all of a sudden she's on the sideline, and then she's not, and they're trying to shield her as if she's not involved anymore. You got the weird stuff from New England of don't let any Patriots scouts in here, and by God, make sure you're not tweeting about Drake May, even though he was the quarterback here, and there's not a long list of, like,
it's awesome
really
for
high level. Yeah, not a long list of really high level North Carolina football players. And then you have this where, you know, the reporting suggests that he's already looking to get out of there, and then maybe they're looking to get him out. Like, it is, if it continues to go this way, you know, I heard some people yesterday comparing it to like Urban Meyer in the NFL. It's going to be one of the worst coaching hires and tenures in like the history of sports. That's how bad it's going. And it just continues to amaze me that we're talking about Bill Belichick in all this.
Yeah.
The guy who won 6 Super Bowls. And look, if you want to take it back further than North Carolina, you can. Because I'll be honest with you,
it's starting to go downhill.
From the moment Tom Brady left there, he looks awful in all this. They went immediately, you know, Mac Jones came in and they were fine for a year. And then they went immediately downhill. He started making stupid decisions and bringing, let's make Matt Patricia and Joe Judge. Let's like co-offensive coordinate this thing. That was a total disaster. They ruined Mac Jones in New England.
Bringing his son everywhere.
Yeah, bringing the son everywhere. He's getting fired. And now he wants nothing to do, apparently, with the Crafts and with the Patriots. Like, it is the fall from grace from this guy. I mean, there are going to be documentaries done about this. It's unbelievable.
I mean, it is hard to believe that it's gone downhill this far, this quickly, considering how everything went. And, yeah, maybe just in general, him being a college coach at this stage of his career, you know, in hindsight, looking back, probably, you know, trying to build a program in your 70s, like, you know, I'm not trying to be ageist or anything like that, but this is a long-term kind of situation here. This is not like, I know you, this is a new version and the new transfer portal and NIL. It's like this whole new era in college football, but to think you're just going to be able to walk in and turn a historically not football program into some powerhouse in like a year or two seemed extremely unrealistic to begin with.
Well, I mean, that isn't that kind of the thing about all this? Like, it just, I think it all comes back to ego, right? I mean, isn't that what this is?
Like, yeah, it's like, it feels like it.
Well, trust me, I know better. Like, I'm Bill Belichick. I know better than everybody else.
Yeah.
And look, you know, Joe and I have talked about this before. I think I've had a little bit more patience for this conversation than he has in terms of the, well, he had Tom Brady. Of course he won all the Super Bowls. And I think Joe's right. Early in those Super Bowl runs, it's not like they were dropping back with Brady and throwing it 40 times a game. And
the defenses
were
good.
They had a really good defense.
He was a defensive coordinator.
Look, guys that have played for him have talked about how much of a tactician he was and how great he was. So, like, I have to take that at face value and believe that. Like, he still is, when you look at it, going to go down as one of the greatest head coaches in NFL history. However, with everything that went on before Tom Brady, which was like an average NFL head coach at best, and everything that's gone down since Brady left, like, I can't blame people if you look at it and you say, well, that guy ought to be thanking his lucky stars every day that Brady fell in his lap, because my goodness, if he didn't, he would have never been in the league for more than 4 years. Like, it's crazy.
At this point, I don't think it's unfair to bring up, you know, how many more Super Bowls could they have won if Belichick wasn't the coach, maybe? At some point, did he hold Brady back?
I don't know.
The second half of their career? I don't think so.
I don't think so either, but like, something has gone off the rails.
It has.
Like, something has happened, and maybe, look, I keep coming back to,
maybe the whole Brady thing
just
broke
Brady
him. Maybe it just broke him.
Yeah, like when Brady leaves, and then he goes and wins a Super Bowl elsewhere.
It just something snapped.
Yeah, it kind of feels that way, because it's almost like since then he's been trying to be like
proving everybody
wrong.
Yeah,
watch this. Well, I'll do this.
Yeah,
and it is just totally backfired. So look, I mean, I guess at this point I'm really interested to see what happens over the next couple of weeks here, because I know they put out their very abbreviated statements from that reporting going on. But like, are we going to be in 2-3 weeks talking about Belichick out at North Carolina? Like,
is he
not going to make it through the entire season?
I mean, at this point, it's so toxic right now, and you're in the news constantly every week about bad things. Like, you know, I'm not sure if it's worth keeping him around.
Well, and I'll say this, you know, regardless of where you come down on,
especially if you're not going to win, the whole reason people put up with Belichick's BS anyways is because they won.
And he got away out there.
He got away with so much more other crap earlier in his career that other coaches could not get away with because he won.
Yep.
Whether that's
Spygate,
cheating,
Deflategate,
his hoodie, his sweatshirts, and his clothes, whether that's how
jerk at the press conference,
stiffs fans and kids at the stadium and walks by and just gives them the cold shoulder, or how he was so, you know, unplayer friendly to their families or whatever, or all this other kind of stuff. You know, he got away with it because they won. And so now that he's not winning, it's just kind of, maybe he's coming back around full karma.
Well, it's doing some major damage to the legacy. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We'll take your thoughts on the Belichick situation. A lot of your thoughts have rolled in on that. It is time for the best and worst thing in sports as well. We will take your best things, your worst things on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That's coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
The best and worst of the sports week, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
On ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
It's time! This is the worst.
You look like you're feeling sorry for yourself.
I believe in miracles. Yes! Unbelievable.
He's one of one. He is him.
This is a Coke bottle, it's not a crystal ball.
When I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Okay, let's go.
It is that time of the week, time for the best and worst things in sports. We will take your best things, your worst things, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Hit us up with your best and worst things in the world of sports. Normally, Joe Rexroad going first. He is not here today. Paul Kuharski, also not here yet. I think he will be at some point. Ian Safar, you're up first, baby. Your best and worst things
I will say,
in the world of sports.
Side note here, since we heard Baker Mayfield coming back on our open there, pretty dangerous, I'm not going to make him my best in sports, but I will say I'm a little bit impressed with Tampa and the offense there.
Look, I'll be honest with you. I used to absolutely despise Baker Mayfield. Now I kind of like him.
Yeah,
I kind of do. Like, did you see the video of him chirping back and forth with the Seahawks fans this weekend?
I did see it. I wasn't able to like hear all the back and forth. I wasn't able to like get into it all. You know, ZipRecruiter or as a recruiter style film, whatever. Yeah, I mean, their offense, they lost Mike Evans. They didn't have Bucky Irving last week at Seattle. Just put up 38 points.
They're good, man.
Abuka is crushing
it. He's unbelievable as a rookie.
I've just been impressed with Tampa and Baker, just as a quick side note.
Yeah.
But I think I will pull a little Rex Road here and go best and worst.
Okay.
Same one. I'm going the DeMarcado fumble.
Oh, man.
I mean, that right there, it not only did it – well, it's the best because it helped give the Titans the win.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Which will take any of those we can get.
At that point, it's complete turning of the tides there to lead the Titans to a victory. So that's about it. But and the worst, to drop that, and the whole situation with Gannon afterwards, getting into his face, giving him more than a love tap, I'd say.
Oh, I would say so, too.
Not quite a punch to the gut, but a good slap to the gut. At least he had his pads on still, so it's not like he completely took him out.
Yeah.
But that whole situation, man, that deserves probably a best and worst. It's double swing there.
Yeah.
So I'll give that for Rex Road.
By the way, a lot of former or in some cases current NFL players have kind of weighed in on that. They're like, man, look, I'm not saying it hurt or anything. But if you are a coach and you put your hands on me on the sideline,
slap a player like that,
you better be ready to get some hands back. It's basically been
well. The poor guy looked distraught.
He did,
and he's on the sideline, and he's got a big, I think his number 70 offensive lineman, like had his arm around him, giving him a good little hug and a little, you know, it's okay, man. You can rest your head on my shoulder, cry on my shoulder.
He's just getting eviscerated.
He just looked terrible. He cost the game. Kyler Murray looked like he was about to cry. And then the coach comes over and yelled, I mean, was chewing him out.
Which I get.
Yelling hard in his face.
Yep.
And then walked by and gave him just like a little, you know, roundhouse, right hook, right to the chest.
Oh, yeah.
Poor guy. Best and worst in sports this week.
My best in sports, hockey season is back. Connor McDavid signs a 2-year contract, which honestly I thought about my worst because I was really hoping Connor McDavid went to free agency just for the excitement of it all. But I from his perspective, look, you got Kirill Kaprizov out there who signed a deal, an 8-year deal, getting paid $17 million per year. I think Eichel signed yesterday for 13.5. Kyle Connor signed for a big number in Winnipeg. 12 point something.
2.5 maybe.
It is kind of amazing that McDavid just said, you know what? I'll sign 2 years and just keep the money the same as it's been for me.
That is crazy, no? Like
he could have gone to the max. He could have gone 20. And he just said, give me 12.5. I mean, I know why he's doing it. He wants to win. And I knew he wasn't going to sign a long contract there because I wouldn't sign a long contract either. Like I'm glad that it's only 2 years for his sake because I would keep every option open as possible. But I just thought that was really cool. You don't see that happen a lot in sports where a guy who could clearly make as much money as he wanted to make, I mean, could have approached the Oilers and said, hey, this is the contract. You sign it, not me. Just said, yep, 12.5. That's fine.
I was surprised it was – I don't know.
NHLPA not going to be happy about that one, though.
Yeah, no. The 2-year bridge deal on that, you know? Just giving him a couple more years to win the cup, doesn't that feel like a little pressure-y?
I think it's what he's doing. I think he's trying to pressure of, like, you better keep going. I'm taking a huge discount, and I'm signing 2 years. You better do everything you can do to get this team as competitive as possible. And if you don't, I'm gone in 2 years. I kind of like the strategy from him. And a quick aside note to that, you know, Matthias Ekholm, one of the all-time great people in the sport of hockey, he signed another deal yesterday that takes him until he's 39.
Good, I didn't see that.
So he's making $4 million a year. So very happy to see that, and it looks like he's going to close out his career in Edmonton, but that'll take him until he's 39. No,
at least he feels like he's in Sweden with the temperature.
Well, there's no doubt about that. No doubt about that. My worst thing in sports, and there's a couple different ways I could go with this, but I think after this weekend, it kind of has to be this. James Franklin and Penn State. How in the world did you lose to UCLA? Like, I don't understand it. I still, for the life of me, can't figure it out. And look, you know, I don't have any sympathy for this because this is what they've all decided to do. But I think it's becoming pretty clear. Like, the travel in the Big Ten, clearly a problem, right? Because, like, there's example after example after example of these teams just going from one side of the country to the other.
USC complained about it.
Just not handling well. And look, I don't buy into that as an excuse. You can't accept all the money and build this super conference and talk about how great you are, and then the moment things go wrong for your team, start whining about the travel. Like, that part of it bothers me. But it is amazing to me. Like, that's one of the more – not that I think Penn State is great, but, I mean, UCLA for most of the season,
I haven't been
convinced could beat Hendersonville High School, much less Penn State. So it's amazing to me that that's the game they want. Like of all the teams they've played and how bad that Nico and everybody around there has looked, that Penn State is the game that they won through all this. It's incredible to me. My worst thing in sports – James Franklin and the Penn State Nittany Lions.
I think that's fair. I think that's up there. This one kind of hurts me that I kind of thought about. I don't really want to do this, but Pavia.
I was
disappointed from Pavia this week.
That's fair. I mean, he sets the bar high, but that's two crucial turnovers in the red zone.
Like, you know, I was just disappointed in Vandy in general.
Yeah.
Against Bama. You know, I don't think they played very well. Maybe it kind of caught up with them, but the stretch there of playing a lot of games in a row and Bama the last one and the hype around it. But I was disappointed in that. It's not like my worst thing in sports because, you know, it's not worst thing ever. But I was disappointed in Vandy and Pavia a little bit this week.
Yep. Travis says, best thing, there's only one right answer here, boys. It's hockey season. Worst thing, my sports attention amongst all the sports that are going on right now, I'm spread very thin.
Yeah.
You know, people talked about this, you know, and we have this conversation. The October-April conversation. Which one's better? I lean April slightly because I love the playoffs in hockey. It's like my favorite thing in all of sports. However, I mean, start a hockey season in the middle of the NFL season. College football is about to heat up. I mean, October in college football is a great month. I may be switching. Like, it's pretty awesome this time of year.
I think October is my choice. October versus April. It's always been pretty close because you combine, like you said, the hockey playoffs with some March Madness, with baseball getting underway. It's spring. It's just like this feeling, you know, of like, okay, we made it through the darkness and we're heading in the right direction.
Yep.
But there's no football. The draft is there and the draft is super fun.
Yep.
Especially around here, considering that's the only thing that matters. Yeah. But October, like, every, you know, the weather, a lot of it maybe is tied to the weather. Starts to get cool.
Yep.
A little chilly out there this morning. If you're just waking up, might want to get your jacket out.
Yep.
But the weather changing, starts to get dark. Hockey comes on. The baseball playoffs are on.
It's pretty sweet.
Football is rolling. Yeah. October, you could put that as your best in sports, the month of October sports rolling. Yeah.
Brian says, Penn State losing and watch Jimmy Frank making excuses. He's a Michigan fan, his best in sports. Worst thing in sports, Braves Twitter. All season they complain about Brian Snitker. He steps down, and now they say how great of a manager he is. Says, pick a side. Do you love him or do you not?
Welcome to fandom.
It's true. There is a lot of that.
Especially on social.
Yep, one vote for the worst thing in sports is Kaprizov. He's good. He ain't that good, and he's signing a $17 million contract. I mean, if you're the Wild, don't you kind of feel like you got swindled?
A little bit.
It's like, okay, so you signed for $17 million. And don't get me wrong, Kirill Kaprizov, great player.
Couldn't have happened to a better person than Craig Leopold.
Yeah, and then you're looking around, and you're like, okay, so McDavid signed for 12.5, and Jack Eichel just signed for 13.5. How in the heck did we end up with almost $17 million a year for Kaprizov?
It was fun watching that drama a little bit. Just like, oh, no, don't worry about it. Yeah. Oh, we're not going to talk about it. Oh, we just turned down the richest deal in NHL history. Don't worry about it. And, oh, it was funny. And they made it happen. I mean, good on them for paying him. But, yeah, they probably feel a little bit misled, maybe.
We will get into the Titans and the Raiders coming up next, including one thing I think we're going to be paying attention to for a while around here as it relates to both of these teams, and a certain selection that was made. We will get into that. Andrew Burnett, Predators head coach, will join us at 7:30. Charles Robinson coming up at 8 o'clock. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.